Gordon, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon.
So spring fever is hasn't hit yet, but just around the corner, right?
It's on the absolute brink.
Yeah.
I've seen a few motorcycles out, and people are, I think, are just itching to get some better weather and do some outdoor things.
So that becomes a busy time for you?
Well, yeah. What you'll start having happen is anybody that puts snow tires on is going to want to get them off the car.
Right.
So snow tires off, summer tires on and or new tires. And people start thinking about travel, maybe more so towards the warmer weather in the summer, but also some people going on some spring break trips.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's some travel going on.
All right. So get ready to get busy, and we'll get busy on the show here. It's David and New Paltz. You're on first with Gordon Fricke.
Ray, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'd like to ask a question. I have a Subaru. It's a 2000 Outback Legacy, and it has about 135,000 miles on it, and the head gasket is starting to leak. And I took it to a mechanic who is pretty knowledgeable, and he put in some stop leak that Subaru manufactures, and it seems to be working so far. But I see down the line sometime I'm going to have to get a head gasket. And I have a question. Subaru car dealer will put in the head gasket without machining the head itself. And other places I've inquired said they require machining of the head. Do you have any comment on that?
Yeah. What you have happening there is quite common for that vintage Subaru. And the problem initially starts out as an external coolant leak. They actually leak a little bit outside. So you might be getting a drip on your garage floor, or the coolant level goes down over a period of time and you have to add it, and you keep adding. You're saying, where's this antifreeze going? Subaru actually early on did do a recall and took a look at these cars. And if you had the beginnings of an external leak, they would put in their what's called Subaru cooling system conditioner. And it is a stop leak, but it's very, very mild and not harmful. It doesn't plug things up. And it's remarkable stuff. And if the leak is tiny, like these start out, it will take care of it. And it may take care of it for a long time, maybe the rest of the car's life with you. If the car does end up needing new cylinder head gaskets, if the engine has never been overheated, there's generally, on that particular engine, not a major cause for machining of the cylinder heads, because your car has two cylinder heads, and they're very, very short. They're basically only operating two cylinders. So there's not a big, long cylinder head where warpage, the longer it is, the more warpage becomes an issue. They do need to be very carefully checked, though. And if they're perfectly within specs, they can just be cleaned and reused. No machining necessary. Mm-hmm. But it's up to the guy doing the work to carefully check them to make that decision.
Okay.
And my next question is, is there any oil or in the engine block itself that mixing with the water, or does the oil come from the outside of that leaking area?
Generally, you don't get the antifreeze oil intermix in this situation, because the leak is almost always external. Leaks outside, drips on the ground, versus going into the combustion chamber or going into the oil. Mm-hmm. That's what these cars usually end up doing.
All right.
So I'm okay.
Yeah, you are.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, David. So, okay, you know, having had head gasket problems in my vehicles,
That's not a good thing to bring up with you, is it?
No, it makes me wince. Now, the thing is, why don't you tell me what exactly is a head gasket that has meant deep sixing more than one of my vehicles over the years?
Well, again, some cars, like the Subarus, it starts out pretty minor.
But what is it? What does a head gasket do?
What it does is it makes the seal between the engine block and the cylinder head. Those two pieces are bolted together.
Is it a piece of rubber or something?
Well, no, it's made out of a bunch of different things, but there's some metal in there. A lot of the newer head gaskets are all metal. They're a series of layers. They're multi-layered gaskets.
Yeah.
In the earlier years, they had a lot of graphite in them, so you had some steel and some other material. But there's a lot of things to seal out between the head and the block. You've got to seal out high pressure, you know, the combustion chamber. You're sealing out antifreeze. And you're sealing out oil if it gets delivered to the cylinder head, and it's got to go through a hole in the gasket. So it's an incredibly important item.
And, you know, having looked at them for Cadillacs, not a tremendously expensive part.
No.
It's the labor that'll kill you, eh?
Absolutely. The part is very minuscule compared to the labor involved.
Yeah. Let's go to Jim in Malta. Jim, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm glad
sure.
I came in and turned on the radio. I have a question about the mileage on my car. I have a 13-month-old Honda Civic that I bought brand new. And the first 6 months I had the car, from March until August, I drove back and forth to Plattsburgh a lot, so I tested the mileage. And the car was right on with the advertised amount. I say probably 39 miles per gallon on the highway. Then after August, it started to drop with no change in the way I drive on these long trips to about 34. And I spoke to Honda about it, and they put it up on the computer, and they said the computer doesn't show anything wrong, and so there can't be anything wrong. But I'm still getting about, you know, 5-6 miles less on a round trip.
Yep.
I was wondering, is that common, or is there anything that they should look at? Because I'm going to bring the car back in again.
Sure. Well, here's the interesting thing about it is the time of the year that you're measuring your gas mileage. You started, when did you get the car? March, you said?
Yeah, beginning of March.
Beginning of March, okay. So here's what happens. The gasoline refineries or the gas makers winterize their gasoline for the cold states. And when they do that, the efficiency of that gasoline decreases, so the car uses a little bit more of it. So everybody gets poorer miles per gallon in the winter. The colder temperatures have an effect on your gas mileage, too, because the warm-up time is much longer, and your engine has to run a little bit richer to get it up to operating temperature. So in the winter, you just plain use more gasoline. Some cars show it more than others.
Actually, I was getting good mileage from March through the spring, even into August. It was in August where it actually started to drop. That was when I brought my daughter back to college in late August, and it was like 34, and it stayed like that. Even dropped a little more when I put snow tires on in November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that also has an effect on tire pressure. Has a effects, particularly on a light, small car that you're trying to squeeze every mile per gallon out of. The pressure in your tires will affect it. If you've added a roof rack, that will cause more drag. And the quality of the gasoline has a big effect. So even though you may buy your gasoline at the same station all the time, they get varying loads of quality. So there's a lot of factors. If you had a drastic drop, but let's say you were getting 34, now you're getting 24, that's a big deal. If it's 1 or 2 miles per gallon, so many things can play into it.
Yeah.
The one thing I noticed is an economy button that you press to get the higher mileage.
Yep.
And it makes a difference, but about 1 or 2 miles per gallon, it's no big deal.
You mean that's not just turning on a light? There's really stuff happening?
Yeah, it may just, sometimes actually driving locally, when I drive from here in Malta to go skiing in Gore Mountain, I get like 32, 33.
Yeah. Nice.
And it's about the same whether I use the Eco or not.
Well,
so maybe it is just a button for
the light. If you like the light, leave it on.
Yeah, that's right.
Jim, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks, bye.
So, I mean, if Jim were to put gas treatment in, STP, or some of the other ones we've talked about, would that maybe compensate for some of the winterization of the gas?
No, it won't. It won't get that. It won't get the gasoline's volatility. It won't change that and bring the efficiency of the gas back.
But it's not an octane drop.
Not really. No, it's more of a of its ability to light and burn. And because it's colder, you want that to light easier and faster. But when that happens, the efficiency decreases. It's like diesel fuel. Diesel is a lot harder to light than gasoline, but it's way more efficient. It's more thermally efficient. It's a heavier fuel.
So that's why in the old days, or maybe still, I don't know, truck drivers, long-haul drivers would have their trucks on overnight.
Yeah, because that diesel was so hard to start cold the next morning.
Very interesting. Hey, Zach, let's take a break here. We'll be back with Gordon Fricke. More of your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from the Garrison in the Hudson Highlands, featuring an 18-hole golf course, restaurants and terrace dining, weddings, getaway packages, and Hudson River views. TheGarrison.com. The Alternative Baker, Rosendale, artisan all-butter baked goods made from scratch, also offering vegan, sugar-free, and wheat-free options, where taste is everything, lemoncakes.com. Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890. With 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont, CurtisLumber.com. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com.
Back with Gordon Fricke. It's, I love this show. I learn so much every time, and I forget it by the next month. It's 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, your car calls, and we go back to the phones. Mary Ellen, where are you calling from in Massachusetts, Mary Ellen?
Uh-oh, I think you blew it. This is Andrew in Saranac.
Oh, hello. How are you doing, Mary Ellen? We're going to get the sheets on the wall here. Aha! It's Andrew in Saranac. How are you?
Yeah. I'll talk if you want. I never shut up. So.
All right, man, you're on.
I just turned on the radio, so I heard the last part of the head gasket problem. And I'll preface to say I'm a real serious car guy, gearhead. I was formerly an ASC mechanic. And I drive Corvairs in the summer.
Nice.
And Chevy trucks in the winter.
Rear engines, 16, eh? Oh, nice. 20. All right, go ahead.
My question is, I've got a 95 Suburban, 6.5 turbo diesel, and it just turned 250,000 miles. So I bring them all from out west. Every one of my vehicles, all 15 or 20 or whatever they are, have zero rust, and I rust-proof them with a product called Fluid Film. Anyways, I'm promoting the product. But
yes.
My question is, head gasket problem I think I'm having on this vehicle, because when I check the oil, the dipstick has a bit of sludge on it. So I'm wondering, should I use this magic head gasket sealer in a can that you see on different shelves of stores and you see it promoted on the internet? Or do I put brand new cylinder heads on that could either be made in USA or made in China? They're $800 a pair plus huge amount of labor, because he's going to basically take half the engine apart to change the heads. And I know that 6.5s have head gasket problems. Cylinder heads crack. It's got a ton of miles. It runs super. But
okay, Andrew. Are you convinced, or do you know that you have a head gasket issue? Is the oil filling up with coolant, or what are your symptoms, other than the sludge on the stick?
There's a little sludge on the stick. There's none in the oil filler tube, where usually you'll get some of the white milky stuff. But exhaust doesn't smoke, but my coolant is down every 2 or 3 weeks. I got to add 2-3 quarts for even a gallon every 2 or 3 weeks. And we don't drive a lot, 10,000-12,000 a year.
Have you determined can you tell where the coolant is going? You're not having any external leaks?
Oh, no, not a drop. It's amazing with such high mileage that it's a very well-maintained truck before I bought it.
You can have minute coolant leaks that seep out and evaporate, and they never drip on the ground, and over a long period of time you've got to keep topping it up, and it's common for vehicles like yours to do that. Now the thing could be using a little bit of coolant. It could be burning it up. Here's the thing. I wouldn't go with the extreme products that are talking about sealing up everything under the sun, because that's what they tend to do. They sometimes plug up passages that don't want to be plugged up. They may get into your heater core and plug your heater up. You've got nothing to lose, really, on this vehicle, but I would use something mild. And again, that product that's marketed and sold through Subaru, you can use that in anything. Because that engine holds way more coolant than the Subaru, you may want to put twice or three times the amount in and give it a try, because that's not going to really plug up or harm anything.
Hmm.
And if it's capable of stopping your leak, it will, and you'll see the results. If it doesn't, you'll have to take it further.
I've gone to a few forums on vehicles, and one of the coolant sealers, the head gasket sealers, they recommend disconnecting your heater core, which I know how to do, and flush all the coolant out several times to eliminate it. But I was curious, maybe I should call up an engine rebuilder and see what happens 10, 20, 50, 100,000 miles after this stuff is put in, and maybe the Subaru stuff is better because it's not as intense. And I understand, am I going to end up coating everything under in the engine with...
Well, you see, if you use the so-called block sealers, the real heavy-duty stuff, yes, that's trying to put a film on everything, and you really don't want to do that because it's going to coat the inside of your radiator, your heater, and... I've taken engines apart where it's plugged up the little holes in the head gaskets.
Mm.
I would use the mild stuff, and that Subaru stuff just floats around in there harmlessly until it finds a way out, and then it hits oxygen, and then it starts to make its seal.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do.
Yeah, I saw a friend of mine has a Grand Am with the 2.4, the quad 4 engine, I think it is.
Yep.
And he had an intake manifold leak, which I understand is very common on those. I said, well, it's a huge job, and the car's getting kind of old, and he put in some bars leaks for $5. And I even did a radiator pressure test. I have my pressure tester from my garage days. We put it up to 12 pounds, and it didn't leak, and that was months ago, but is he doing extra damage? My Suburban's in beautiful condition because it was never, ever driven, of course, in the winter, being from Phoenix. It's got a lot of life left there.
Yeah, no, you're not going to damage it by using that stuff. Okay. I would give that my first shot and then see what happens.
Andrew, thanks a lot for the call. So, you know, me being paranoid about this, is this something I should just do once? Just get it from my car and dump it in?
Yeah, as long as your coolant looks decent and it hasn't been doctored up with a bunch of other things, which it probably hasn't.
No.
It's a good preventative measure that doesn't seem to harm anything. If you put 20 cans in it, maybe. But the normal amount, I don't think it's an issue.
Probably two for mine.
Yeah, it's a bigger system.
Yeah, okay, let's go to Brian in Red Hook. Brian.
Hi, I actually have another gasoline question for you.
Okay.
My father does not travel that much, but he always likes to top off his tank. So, I mean, he never really lets it go below an eighth of a tank. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts on that for, you know, the amount of gas that's always in there, is it going stale over time?
Sure. Yeah, that's
cool.
A good question.
Yeah.
Here's the idea. If you keep the tank near empty all the time, eighth, quarter to empty, when you do that year round, you are going to get some condensation inside the gas tank. And that occurs... I mean, you'll see condensation on windows if the weather changes drastically, and that's happening all over the place inside your gas tank. Today, with the percentage of ethanol in the gas, 10%, that is because it's alcohol, it's constantly looking for moisture. So the moisture issue is not such an issue anymore today because the gas is soaking it up and you're burning it out the tailpipe. But the rule of thumb used to be better keep it closer to full to prevent any condensation from occurring. As far as the gas going stale, gas lasts longer when it's sealed up, when the oxygen can't get to it. So unless he's not going through a tank of gas in months of time, you might want to keep it more towards the full side just to play it safe.
No, well, he always does. Well, I think you heard me wrong. He only burns an eighth of a tank and then fills it back up.
Oh, I see.
So he's almost full all the time.
He's keeping it on full all the time.
Well, in that case, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, in that case, you may want to see if you can coax him into running it a little lower. If he gets it down to a half or so, when he fills it back up, he's adding half again brand new gas, and that's charging up, freshening up everything that's in there.
Right. I mean, he just likes to always have a full tank.
Yeah.
Gets to an eighth of a tank. Oh, God, good gas.
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah, I think you're all right doing that.
All right, Brian. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Have a good one. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Ted, Hello, Ted.
Yes. Hey, Ray.
Welcome.
I like this. I like the both of you guys.
Well, thank you. We like you.
Yeah, that's good. I appreciate it. I have a 2009. Well, it's a Pontiac Vibe. I think of it as a Toyota Matrix. And it has the middle engine, the 2.4. And actually, part of this overlaps, I've been thinking of, at that sort of age, I would think, because I will probably keep the car a long time, of flushing and changing the antifreeze. And, you know, I mean, I think that's still a good idea. And I wonder also if it has any complications, if it's something like that's something I could handle myself, probably buy the pre-mixed antifreeze. It probably has a dependable good water source along with the antifreeze. So that's one topic. Let me shoot another trivia in there first. And because I have mounted snow tires on steel wheels, and I'm swearing that because they're studded, Nokias, that they throw off the pressure sensor, somehow the communication, because it's only with when I have the snow tires on, and it's sort of a random kind of way that on comes the low tire pressure.
It's a magnetic issue, you mean?
Or? And I read in the finest print in the most hidden corner of the owner's manual, I think I saw something about if you put chains on, something will... You know, anyhow, that's just trivia. If anybody else is having that sort of an issue, that might be something to explore. I've decided to ignore it.
All right, let's ask the Swami. What do you think?
All right, okay, let's start with the coolant.
Great.
Yes, it should be changed periodically. Your owner's manual will probably give you recommendations on when to do it.
Right.
If you do it yourself, which you can, and if you don't, if you do it when they recommend you do it, it's never going to have a chance to get filthy and rusty and rotten
right.
looking.
Right, I mean, it's good looking. Though.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people say, oh, that coolant looks perfect. Why would I change it? Well, now's the time to do that so it never gets nasty.
Also, just this last week, I was going to check, but I found myself missing about a cup and a half of it, so which brought up the Subaru additive issue. And I'll look more closely, as I say, as I have the get taking the wheels and tires off.
Over enough period of a time, a little bit's going to evaporate. It goes into the expansion tank, it goes out, it goes in, it goes out, and a tiny bit evaporates.
Right.
It takes a long time.
But it was down to the bottom, and I didn't, you know, I usually look around in there every once in a while, and I was very surprised to see it essentially at the bottom of the coolant tank.
Well, snoop around and see if you can see anything on the
edge. I put it up to the line, and I'll watch the rate of progress,
But yes, drain and refill it yourself. And if you buy the pre-mixed, a lot of people say, why should I pay for water? But actually, it's not a bad idea because theoretically, you're supposed to use a distilled water and low ion content and all that. And, you know,
even there used to be the old German manufacturer's information that maybe distilled water wasn't perfect because it was too eager to react with iron or something, but that's never mind. That's just a garage story.
Yeah. That could be going back to the World War II days with the atom bomb and stuff. Right there.
All right.
Similarly, brake fluid. I mean, because it's got all the automatic stuff and so on, but is that an owner changeable thing? I have a little vacuum pump I used to use a lot for helping me to flush, you know, one corner, just with new brake fluid. I mean, I have similar feelings.
Yeah, that's also a good thing that gets commonly overlooked because the brake fluid is also hygroscopic.
Right.
And it's absolutely begging for moisture.
Yeah.
And it grabs it wherever it can. And then it corrodes the inside of your brake system and you get sticking, calipers.
In my old days of old Saabs, I used to replace the rear wheel cylinders frequently.
So anyway, good to change the coolant.
Thanks very much.
Good to change the brake fluid.
Those fluids,
And then the last question
the
was...
The wheels, the studs on the wheels.
Yes. If your car has tire pressure sensors in the wheel, which...
It does,
then,
at great expense.
Okay, do your snow wheels have also sensors in them?
Well, those are the ones that are at great expense, and I did,
So all of your wheels have the sensors in them?
Correct.
Okay.
And the other ones will be okay. I mean, the wheels, the steel wheels with studs, seem to have this thing of screwing up the communication. And it's, as I say, it's kind of random, but I can reset it, and sure enough, the next time I'm headed for Montpelier or something, it'll come on and flash and do all that stuff, but there's no pressure problem.
There definitely is the possibility, because you've got all that steel going around the outside of the tire.
Yeah.
And those are radio frequency transmitters in each wheel. So they're sending a signal, just like a little radio station, to your computer in the vehicle to tell what's going on. So there definitely could be an issue there with the studs. I haven't run into it very often, but...
Well, I thought, in addition to my curiosity, I've quit talking about it with people because nobody say that that's the case. But I think if you have other people out there with that head-scratching kind of thing...
All right.
There you go.
Yeah, it could be multipath on the signal, maybe. Ted, thanks a lot. Let's go over now. Now it's Mary Ellen. Where are you calling from in Massachusetts?
Hinsdale.
Well, it's very nice to finally have you on the show, despite our best efforts.
I know. I dropped service.
Ah,
so
I see.
Thanks for getting me on.
You betcha.
I have a general question for a car expert. My husband is a real Volvo 240 guy. Always had Volvos. My first Volvo was a 122 wagon and just kind of went into the 240s. My question is, we now have three. We have two wagons and a sedan. His claim is that they're going to last another 20 years. There's no rust on them, and he's very good at fixing them. The only major expense we've had is that the sedan, which is a 1990 and has 70,000 miles on it, needed a new head, so that was like $700. It's something he couldn't do. But the rest of the stuff, I mean, he's got a lot of parts, and he's very good at fixing them. So his argument is that we don't have a car payment. and he says they're going to last.
That's a good argument.
It's a nice thing not to have.
But my question is, are they going to last another 10 years?
Well.
Are they that good?
They are. And part of the reason they're that good is a lot of the people that owned Volvo 240s or Volvos in general of those years were very nicely conditioned into taking good care of those cars. And whenever things went wrong, it got taken care of instead of ignored or let go. So a lot of cars are capable of going long-term, long mileage, but no matter what kind of car it is, you have to do certain things to them to keep them alive. So potentially you could, if he didn't run out of the ability to get parts, you could keep those cars going for potentially a long time. It may reach the point where a lot of things are just so worn out that you're done with them and you want to get another car. But if parts hold up, if you can keep getting replacements and he can keep working on them, they definitely are very durable. Relatively simple cars, for that era.
Right.
So the answer is possibly 20 years, I'd be a little hesitant about. 10, maybe.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that maybe you'd like a new car.
Oh, well, did I give you the wrong answer?
No, it's, but keeping three, his philosophy is keeping three on the road. There's only two of us.
Right.
Keeping three on the road always keeps one, or he can work on one while the other two are on the road. And that doesn't really happen very often. A lot of times one just sits in the barn until summer. We'll take the sedan out because that's a fun car. It's a 5-speed, and it's a lot of fun to drive. But, I don't know. I just wanted to get confirmation that they are good enough to go.
He sounds like a smart man. He should buy a couple of more cars. I think he'll be all set.
We've got two more. There, one's in the barn and one's a wreck. So we've got a total of five.
So you got parts.
You're all set.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you're not going to get a new car.
Yeah, very logical. Did you marry Spock by any chance? He's very, very logical. Hey, Mary Ellen, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, Zach, let's take the break now, and then we'll get back to the home stretch with Gordon Fricke. 1-800-348-2551 is the number.
Support comes from Foresight Land Services, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. For 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, land planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. Hudson Valley Bounty, an initiative of the Hudson Valley Agribusiness Development Corporation, promoting Hudson Valley farms, wineries, restaurants, and more. HudsonValleyBounty.com. Identity Eyewear, Albany. Customized eyewear fittings, European frame lines, and more. Identity Eyewear, it's what sets you apart. EYEDENTITY Eyewear.net. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op in Albany, offering local and organic produce, natural groceries, artisan cheeses, and more. HonestWeight.coop.
Lovely, lovely Frank Zappa here on a Thursday edition of Vox Pop. It is Gordon Fricke's time here. We love having him here. It's cars and trucks and all things about gas mileage. We learn more about gas mileage on this show than anything else, I think. Look what the cat dragged in. It's our exalted producer, Patrick Donjes, from the social media. Go.
That was yesterday with the cats. Dan on Facebook asks, I have a 2003 Jetta TDI with 155K miles. At 150K, I had the timing belt done. When I was in, they said that they noticed the turbocharger was leaking a tiny bit into the pan in the intercooler, and they said it wasn't leaking from there to the outside, so now it's not continuously leaking, but keep an eye on it if you see a lot of smoke. Now when I start the car after not driving it for a day or so, I see a small puff of smoke when it starts up. Is this something I should worry about, or should I just keep an eye on it?
Yeah, that's a good question for anybody with a turbocharged engine. The turbochargers will pass a little bit of oil, and you'll get oil in the intake track that is... Sometimes people get alarmed by this, oh my God, the turbo's gone, there's oil, but they're going to leak a little bit inside. I think you would just be better off keeping an eye on it. And what color is the puff? The question is the color of the puff of smoke. If it's blue, really, really blue, that's generally oil. Black is fuel. White is coolant. So keep an eye on the color of that smoke. Keep an eye on your oil level. And don't panic. Don't think about changing that turbocharger.
So just to be clear, oil would be bad.
Well,
a little bit is okay.
They're all going to pass a tiny bit at that mileage. Okay. So I think really pay attention to the color of the smoke, and then just watch everything and don't do anything yet.
Keep an eye on it.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
What does a turbo do?
The turbocharger basically just pumps air into the engine more than the engine can get by itself, and that adds to the efficiency of the engine, makes a small engine produce more power.
Is it an intake in the front, or where does the air come from?
The exhaust system, the exhaust of the engine turns the turbo, spins it.
Yeah.
The other end of the turbo is basically a fan, and it pulls the air through the air cleaner packs it into the engine.
Wow.
Under some pressure.
Interesting. Does that help gas mileage?
Well, what it does is it makes a small engine be able to have considerably more power than it normally could when you need it. But if you're really easy and light on the throttle, you're getting the economy of that little engine.
Okay, so if you're at highway speeds, it would kick in or...
Yeah, the turbo can be bad on gas mileage if you're to the floor all the time. But if you drive it easy and normal, it gives you a good increase because you're using a small engine all the time until you need the power.
Can you put a turbo on mine?
Maybe somebody makes a kit.
Let's do it. Roger in Granville. Roger, you're on.
Yes. I'm calling in regard to another gas mileage question.
Oh, good.
I have had a 1999 and a 2003 and 2006 Subaru. And they normally rate mileage at 27 or 28 and 29. For over long distances, and I normally get that, if not actually even more than that. About a year and a half ago, we purchased a Chevy Equinox to get a wagon. All of these are all-wheel drive, and it indicated that the mileage should be between 22 and 29 miles to the gallon. And I have never gotten 29 miles to the gallon. I'm really getting more like 26 or 27. And then also this car had a rattle when we started it, and at about 20,000 miles, they had to go in and change the timing chain and the timing belt, which I've never had happen on a car, and now the rattle's coming back some. And I'm just wondering your thoughts, as I'm beginning to think that I have a car with some sort of a problem, and it kind of irks me when I see the signs that they say Chevy's Equinoxes are going to get 32 miles to the gallon. I know mine's all-wheel drive, so that's 29, but it isn't coming even close to what the upper end is. The best I think I've ever gotten is 27.
Yeah. Those are all estimates anyway, right?
Yes. Well, that was I was going to say. There are a few car manufacturers in hot water overstating the miles per gallon. One of them is Hyundai.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, because nobody's getting the mileage that they claim.
Well, doesn't the government test that?
I tell you, if you get on a website to check miles per gallon, you can get a lot of varying numbers. When the car manufacturers do their tests, they are doing things under the most ideal conditions. It's a perfect day. Everything is optimal. Tire pressures. The guy driving the car probably weighs 90 pounds. I mean, everything is...
So Alan was driving the car.
Yeah, everything is set up to provide the maximum possible number that you ever could. The best gas, the you know, oil has to be of the specific viscosity. And I would imagine somewhere in the fine print they tell you that. But you're going to be hard-pressed to get the readings that the car maker tells you.
So it's not really anything to worry about except that it annoys you.
It gets a lot of people upset because they say the sticker on the window from Chevy or from Hyundai or whoever it is says I can get 39 and I've never gotten it.
But it says estimate. I mean, it
always says
estimate.
It always says estimate, yeah.
Sorry, Roger.
The thing that's gotten me is that three cars, Subarus, get what they talk about, if not better. And I don't have any interest in Subarus. But, it's frustrating. And then this timing belt thing and this rattle in the motor starting at like 25,000, and that they did replace that completely under warranty, and now there's actually a recall for the oil gauging sensor to tell you when to change the oil, which I'm going to bring it in and tell them about this rattle.
Well,
the car's got 44,000 on it right now,
yeah,
and it just doesn't seem like it should be doing that.
That's true. That's not a lot of miles for having any timing component issues, I don't believe.
Well, he swapped it out of 20,000,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so that tells me that there's either problems, inherent problems. So definitely when you bring it back, see if that noise can be diagnosed. Maybe it's the same thing, maybe it's something else, but I would be sure to check on that so you don't have an issue where that timing chain fails and then you're out of warranty, or if you already are, that could be very bad news.
Are you sure the rattle is the timing belt? I mean, I've had cars where the pan sort of rattles, or not the pan, but the
shields for the exhaust.
Clutch shield, or what do they call that? The
throw-up bearing. Is that on your old Escort?
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually thought it might be that, but the guy came out, was very honest, and said, this thing shows a timing belt. I'm not sure if it was belt or chain. He said, it's going to take a day or so to do this. Gave me a loaner, and they totally replaced it, and it seemed a little better. And now it seems to be back doing it again. And, I'm beginning to get really concerned, and it seems like, I guess they've looked at it. This would be the third time. And if it's not getting fixed, it seems like I almost have something under the lemon law or whatever.
Oh boy.
Along those lines.
Well, you know, when you take it in, take some notes and call us next month, okay?
Yep. No, I will.
Roger, thanks a lot. Let's go over to Lisa in Hurley. Lisa, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, my boyfriend has a 2000 Audi TT, and his car is supposed to take the highest gas possible. One day, he decided to put regular gas. I would like to know, would that have any kind of side effect, if any? Because I really got upset with him, And he said it wouldn't have any kind of effect by him putting regular gas just at one time.
Good question.
So
yeah.
No, I would like to hear. Yes.
No, he didn't ruin the engine on you. Is this your car or his car?
Oh, it's his car.
His car. Okay. Yeah. No, that was not the worst thing in the world to do.
Okay.
That engine, the factory did require or recommend, and I believe it's 91. You don't have to go 93, but there's a lot of gas pumps that skip that.
You can't find it. You can find 89, and then it goes right to 93.
They want to jump you right up to the most expensive stuff. Now, there are some stations, and I have some cars that require premium. And the premium that they're requiring is 91. You can put 93 in it, but you don't have to. It doesn't do any more good.
Yeah.
If you go down to 89 on a car that requires 91, it'll survive because there's a unit called a NOx sensor in the engine that is listening for any bad noises from poor octane gas, and it'll make corrections to a point. But I would find a station that has the 91 and use it. But if you can't find it and you're traveling and you got to put 89 in it, it's not going to kill it.
Okay, good.
Okay, thank you so much.
Good. We're happy to promote the domestic tranquility. Let's go to Olwen in Florence. You're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Sure thing.
Okay. My question is this. I've had Subaru Foresters, and they've been great cars. And I live in the hills, so I have a lot of unusual travel. My 2001, I now have a 2008, but my 2001 had two things that happened. One is service on a regular basis, and the timing belt welts on it. And no one had mechanic didn't check it out, didn't do anything else. Well, since then, I found out that I should have been more aware that the timing belts checked every certain amount of miles. And I've had many different people tell me what those miles should be. So I wanted to find out exactly, if you have a car, when should you be aware that you really need to bring the car in to have the timing belt, checked out? And I had a second thing happen with that car, which was the funny thing kept happening. The engine light kept coming on all the time, all the years I had it. And it was supposed to be, I spent $1,500, $2,000 on a whole exhaust system, blah, 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 blah. And what happened was, eventually, I said, forget this, and I just didn't bother bringing it in until I had to get it inspected. Then I had to pay another, a couple of thousand. And as it turned out, no, this is really interesting. As it turned out, I'm standing at the gas station, I'm pouring in gasoline into the car, and I'm noticing my feet are getting wet. And the gasoline is pouring out of the car. And I stop. I bring the car in, and he takes out the neck, where you put the gas in and where it goes into the tank.
Yep, the filler neck pipe.
Exactly, the filler neck. The filler neck was so rusted that it had holes the size of my fist in it.
Yikes.
And the reason it lasted as long as it did is that I put the hose in, the hose bypassed the big holes, and that was what was causing the engine light to go.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just thought I'd mention those two things happened with the Forester.
Yep, that's common, that filler neck on Foresters and Legacies and Outbacks. It's a common item to rust through in our neck of the woods because of the salt. And it also does that filler pipe does a little bend, it does a little dip, and I think that dip probably holds a lot of moisture maybe inside, or it just allows more salt to collect there.
So it was a poor design?
Well, I don't know if it's poor, but if the car was never in a salty environment, it wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's common, and it certainly will turn on your check engine light.
Now, what about the timing belt?
Timing,
it's different for each car, right?
It is, and each manufacturer has their own recommendations. And if you have an owner's manual, it's in it, and it'll tell you when they recommend it being replaced. But in your case, it's at 105,000 miles. But there's probably a time recommendation too, maybe no more than 10 years, because that belt is a belt and it's eventually going to deteriorate whether it's being used or not. So that's the story on the timing belt. But all cars with a timing belt that needs to be replaced will have that interval published in their maintenance section.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. And if you let a timing belt go, it's very bad, right?
Oh, very bad.
That's it.
Believe me, I've experienced it with my own family members' cars. Not that we overdid the time, but the belt broke prematurely.
Oh.
And it's ugly. The pistons hit the valves, and it's very expensive.
So is that something, well, maybe not as much for you because you do the labor, but, you know.
Still a big job.
But now, is that something where you definitely want to go with the manufacturer's part and not an aftermarket?
No, not necessarily at all. No, in fact, there's some really nice kits available now where a company called Continental ContiTech packages up a belt, the rollers, the tensioner, everything that needs to be replaced is in this package, and they're very nice quality parts. And then you just change it all and forget about it, and generally it's good till the next interval.
Okay, let's get one or two more in here. Alan in Beacon. Alan, you're on.
Hi. I just recently had my, the brake fluid changed, and it when they did it, it blew out the lines. Does that happen? Should I have, because I had a truck that had over 100,000 miles. Should I have done that?
Well, you mean you developed a brake line leak?
After they changed the fluid, I ended up changing all the brake lines.
Wow, those lines must have been really rusty.
So it wouldn't have been caused really by them changing it, really?
No, but I would have maybe hoped or thought that they would say, boy, Alan, before you even think about having us change this brake fluid, these lines look absolutely terrible, you know. But,
well, see, that's the part two to the question would be, from the outside, they said it looked pretty good.
Well, and that's true, too, because you can have a big, long section of line that looks excellent, and then where
right.
it couples up or where it does a bend, it's gotten rusted through. And it's and I'm not saying that the shop could have seen that if the lines looked relatively good. That's trouble, or that's a lot of nasty work that you don't want to do unless
yeah.
you have to.
Yeah, I argued. Well, they were really nice about it. We argued the price down because, you know, it was more than I expected.
Yeah, I don't think they caused the leak by any means, but I think
right.
it's just that's when the leak occurred, and unfortunately it was shortly after you got a brake fluid change.
Still, the coincidence
and it's because,
is
well,
huge.
You said yeah. it because it's because it gets that condensation on the inside, huh?
Well, they don't usually rust through from the inside because the moisture is mixed in with the brake fluid. But the moisture issue generally causes things to stick, like calipers and wheel cylinders.
Alan, we're just about out of time. But go ahead.
Okay.
Very quickly.
All right. So one last silly question. Would you put in aftermarket, speed controller?
What, a cruise control system?
A cruise control, yeah. Would you put an aftermarket one in?
Well, they do make them for older vehicles, and I've never installed one, but I've seen them in cars, and I think they work. So, yeah, why not?
Okay, Alan, thanks a lot. Okay, we have just about 30 seconds here. Barbara on Facebook asks, 2005 Subaru Outback, 95,000 miles, stalls out upon deceleration and at stop, on and off for several years at different times, have replaced battery, cleaned MAS, replaced spark plugs. Mechanic can't find anything wrong. Don't want to guess and replace expensive parts. Help in 20 seconds. Go.
The only thing that I would do that it doesn't sound like they may have done is take a look at the idle speed controller.
Yeah.
And on Subarus, I think it might have some cooling passages going through it, so it's tough to get at. But clean the idle speed control motor or valve and the throttle plates and put in a dose of super duper injection cleaner and see what happens.
All right. Now, Barbara, your homework is if that works, you call us back. Even if it doesn't, in fact, especially if it doesn't work, call us back next time when Gordon's here and check in. And we'd love to hear from you. And thanks to everybody you called in today. Thanks to Zach Malloy for running the controls. Don Diego handled the phones today. And Gordon Fricke as well. Support comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication, used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com, Café La Perche, Hudson, New York, Boulangerie Lounge and Bistro, featuring European wine selections, dinner menu with bistro fare served nightly, CafeLaPerche.com, and Wiawaka, Lake George, New York, an enrichment and revitalization historic lakefront retreat created by and for women since 1903, WIAWAKA.org for events. That's it. Gordon Fricke did a great job. We will see him again next month for another automotive show. Thanks to everybody who called in. Sorry if you didn't make it through. Thanks to our producer, Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Moyers & Company. And then next week, Medical Monday. At this time, Dr. Martin Farber. Stay tuned now for a news update.